The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
And welcome to We the People for another exciting Sunday afternoon of me trying to get my headphones on. It's not usually me trying to get the headphones on either. It's Phil. It's usually Phil.
No. I'm always prepared.
Tom's having lunch. Got John on the phone. Got a couple things going on at the same time. So you can catch us every Sunday afternoon from noon to 2 here at KCNR Studios in Redding, California. And you can always find us online at We the People Radio. .us. We always keep our archives on there, and Robert and Bob take care of our music and our archives and stuff like that, so we always have commercial free on there. So if you see a topic that you'd like, you don't have to wade through all the commercials. You can hit the show in about an hour and a half and get all the intel. And if you happen to tune in on Sundays, actually, we have a chat room that's available. The link goes from the website or from KCNR 1460. What is it? KCNR1460.com. That's what I was going to say, but I wasn't sure if that was right or not. And you can link that from our site as well. So, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And we have our special guest back again.
Tom Baseko, Shasta County Sheriff.
Because we thought we should talk about law enforcement today, because there's been a lot going on. Tons going on. Tom, why don't you... you know, you've worked in law enforcement for a really long time. So what do you think about when all this, you know, killing police everywhere, and because they're police, not just...
Well, it doesn't matter.
Line of duty things.
It's like losing a family member. And law enforcement... Sorry, I'm working on a summer cold right now for my voice. But law enforcement, we're like a family, so it really doesn't matter if it's in New York, California, or in this particular case, Dallas, Texas. And my heart, my sympathy, and the sympathy from all of our law enforcement here at the Shasta County Sheriff's Office goes out to the family members of the fallen officers at Dallas, and, of course, all the members, men and women of the Dallas PD, with their tragic loss.
Yeah, that was you can never predict something like that. You just never see anything like that coming.
You cannot. 2016 is shaping up to be a deadly year for law enforcement. Already we've lost 59 officers in the line of duty for 2016.
And no kidding.
Yeah, 26 of those have been by gunfire. I don't know if that includes the most recent one at Dallas. Before that, 2015 was also a very deadly year for law enforcement, and we lost 130 officers nationwide.
Wow.
And 27 of those were by gunfire. So I know we'll easily exceed the loss of law enforcement officers by gunfire for 2016.
So this is really kind of trending up, isn't it?
It is, unfortunately. Prior to that, in 2009, there was four police officers from Oakland PD that lost their lives in the line of duty, two on an initial traffic stop, and then later two more officers in a gun battle with the officer or the with the suspect that killed the two officers, and those were two SWAT members that died. And
that
then it
was,
go ahead.
But that was, but they were actually doing their job. Nobody was like sniper attacking them.
Correct. And then earlier in California, there was four CHP officers killed in 1970. That was called the Newhall incident, in which four THP officers lost their lives. And, of course, in 2001, it wasn't a sniper attack or a gun battle, but it was 9/11, in which 71 officers lost their lives in the collapse of the Twin Towers, and about 343 firefighters, in addition to all the other lives that were lost in the Twin Towers.
Jeez. Mm.
So, for law enforcement, you never know if it's going to be that particular day. You know that you could be involved in a particular incident. Nor does a law enforcement officer go to work saying, I'm going to go to work today and end up shooting someone or killing them.
That's true, too.
It's all part of our job. We receive Lots of training nationwide. Our officers are well trained. And it's very difficult when they have to take someone's life. Of course, they don't want to. And in the media, especially with social media and the mainstream media, it's advertised and gets out on the media very quickly. And then a lot of people are very quick to raise judgment even before an investigation has been started.
So, okay, let's go political right out of the box. How much harm does it do to have the president jump on all these things and basically take the side that the police are wrong?
It does a lot of harm because it already starts the rhetoric that there's something wrong there and they don't even have the facts from the case. It's usually by the, if he makes an initial statement, or even governors, mayors,
yeah,
anybody,
sure,
anybody falling into that realm, if they don't have the facts, it's usually very chaotic right when some major incident like that has happened. And they may not have the correct information. Once the investigation gets going, what they thought was facts was actually inaccurate information.
And that's happened over and over and over again.
There was an incident in Minnesota. It was at Minneapolis where the officer ended up killing the suspect. And that started one of the many demonstrations across the nation. It looked as if they were still struggling. And then,
which one was that?
That was the one most recently. And they were, it was on the media.
It's terrible. Which one was that? I can't believe I had to say that.
They were struggling, and then they were, of course, it did not look good, but quick for judgment. But the suspect was armed, and they had a gun.
And for some reason, that winds up, I don't even know if being, if downplayed is the right word, but same too with like the terrorist guys. You know, they turn out to be, you know, hardcore, you know, Islamist guys, and that.
You mean the one in San Bernardino?
Yeah, I mean it doesn't get mentioned for weeks and weeks and weeks, which means that
you know
a huge percentage of the people never hear.
In fact, the president didn't even want to use the T word. Oh my gosh, it was could it be a terrorist action?
Yeah,
and early on they were already getting the information it was a terrorist action, both from the local law enforcement agencies and from the FBI got involved very early on in the San Bernardino incident, and it was shaping up, and rightfully so, that it was a terrorist action.
Yeah, imagine that. But we don't seem to, I don't know, is it our, I guess it's media too. They don't seem to look at the bad person first. They seem to look at the police first.
And that's part of the issues, just even if you go to Ferguson. Ferguson,
oh,
they were trying to paint the officer as the bad person, and then the and it still gets under my skin of the hands up, don't shoot.
Ugh.
Which that was never a fact in the case, and it was disproved.
He never had his hands up.
Never had, and no.
And
he went
they
in.
Still use that.
Basically, did a robbery, was confronted by the officer, and then attacked the officer, and then the officer felt endangered for his life, and ended up shooting the individual, and then of course the chaos started from there.
Well, you know, I don't know. It just seems whenever you hear these, the guy had a gun, pointed it at the police, and was running toward them or whatever. You hear these crazy scenarios, and you think, honest to God, how did you think that was going to turn out?
And here, this was another demonstration regarding protesting against officers shooting individuals, and usually protesting that it was a black individual that had been shot. And here, as soon as the shooting starts, the demonstrators are running away behind the officers. Officers are trying to protect the demonstrators that was demonstrating
against
them.
They're protesting them.
Yes, exactly. Tell them to get back, get down. And then you have the officers running into the face of danger, running towards the shots and looking for the shooter. Or initially, they thought there was multiple shooters involved in this.
And what happened yesterday with the garage in Dallas? How did that all turn out?
I don't have that information.
Yeah, they were sending in dogs, I guess.
Well,
last
I heard, they never found the individual that they were looking for. But
they had. Yeah. I know Dallas PD went on lockdown after.
Yeah, because they thought there was someone in their I don't think it's enclosed, but I mean in their secured parking facility.
Correct. And then I believe San Antonio PD went into lockdown for some shots that were either fired at their police headquarters or very near their police headquarters. That was also in the news this morning. I think I picked it up on Rough and Tumble or something like that.
Well, this becomes sort of epidemic.
It
happens one place, and then you have somebody else who's kind of nutty and thinks, oh, hey, timing's right, you know.
Yeah, yeah. We were talking earlier about trends. My father was in law enforcement for 25 years, and he passed away in 2000, retired in, I believe, 75. But I remember one time he told me that during his career, he had his gun out of his holster one time in the line of duty in that 25-year period.
And he was at the Watts riots, riots.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was at all sorts of stuff.
A whole different time period.
But look at the difference.
Not surprise me. Our officers, at least I can speak for Shasta County Sheriff's Office, it would not surprise me if an officer or more than one officer has their gun out of their holster daily.
Yes. Oh, I believe it.
And for sure, several times a week.
But it just shows you how much times have changed. You know, back in the day, it just seemed like there was a lot more respect for law enforcement.
That's not there now.
And
it's very challenging.
It's not there. It's not there. And everybody wants to challenge now. They want their, you know, they the first thing they do is they grab their cell phone and stick it in a cop's face. And then, you know,
there's always
a combat going on.
Usually I tell my staff that just consider that you are always on top, being filmed in some way, either a closed circuit TV from a security system or a cell phone. Or news media, if you're already at the incident. I was at a stoplight the other day, and I saw about half a block in front of me, there was a local police department conducting a traffic stop. And the person next to me, I saw them pull out their cell phone and start videotaping the traffic stop, just waiting to see if something was going to happen.
Sure, sure. And I think in a lot of cases, that creates a problem. Where normally you wouldn't have a problem with civilians in an area where there is an arrest happening or a confrontation with police. But now that everybody has a camera, they get in the way. And they interfere with the action.
And it can also distract from the officer.
Right.
If it's a chaotic event, is that camera, whether it be a dark object or a shiny object or whatever it is in their hand, is that camera a weapon?
Sure.
The cell phone, I mean, can it be misinterpreted? Not that that's a cell phone, but if it's a dark and it can't, could it be a gun?
At night, you know, the officer looks over and sees something shiny in the guy's hand.
And unfortunately, they make disguised guns to look like cell phones. You can find them on the internet.
What?
Oh, boy.
Yes. So there's a case that goes over a gun, a Derringer, and makes it look like
You're holding a gun to your head while you're talking on the phone?
No, but it looks like a cell phone, so a person could be on the cell phone and point that at the officer.
Sorry, I had it the other way around.
And can shoot the officer with two rounds from a Derringer. And it basically the cell phone case unfolds into a pistol.
Well, that was a brilliant idea.
Yeah,
for someone who's obviously either incredibly stupid or a criminal.
There's been belt buckles.
I've seen belt buckles.
That's Freedom Arms that have a small 22 Derringer or 22 Magnum on the belt buckle, and you can reach down towards your belt buckle, pop that off from the belt buckle, and you have a handgun immediately in your hand there.
Well, I don't know. You know, it seems if the police have you, you should probably not be waving your hands around at all.
Well, in the Louisiana incident, there was a traffic stop made, and the officer was giving commands. It was on the driver's cell phone, who was recording that at the time, and he was giving commands to keep your hands visible. He claimed he had a gun, and he was a concealed weapons carrier, and the officer kept telling him to keep his hands where he could see them, and then the shooting occurred. The officer didn't know if the person was a legitimate licensed concealed weapons carrier.
Yeah,
and
true.
Even
how
if he was, did that person mean them harm? If he wasn't, he could use that to distract him and for the officer to get his guard down a little bit. And then he was failing to follow the instructions of the officer.
That's the big one right there, they don't comply.
And usually a person's reaction time even at best, is somewhere between one half to three quarters of a second in that amount of time. So if that person was going for the gun, your brain has to stop it's not, what it's doing, or whether it's concentrating.
It's not very much time.
No. And for some people that have had a chance to go through, we call them force option simulators, that law enforcement go through, you can see how those fractions of a second can make a difference between life and death for the officer or for someone else.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, we better take a really quick break here before we continue on. This is going to be one of those programs where we're not going to have enough time. It's already... It's already 25
wow.
after. Unbelievable. So we're here with Shasta County Sheriff Tom Senko. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Solution. Well, you know, we don't love to see the plan. You ask me for a contribution. Well, you know, we all do what we can. But if you want money for people with minds that hate, all I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait. All right.
Little music from when your dad was a policeman. Blast from the past.
Yeah, he was a cop, and I was a flower child.
Nice. So proud.
But he did learn. He did teach me a lot of police tactics until I stabbed him with a knife one time accidentally and got beat up by my mom for hurting him.
Are you kidding?
No, we played rough in our house.
God, no lie.
Wow.
But see, like, I know.
I don't know if I can respond to that.
We've been married. It's country 20, living, let me tell you.
We've been married 20 years. I never heard that one. I heard his dad used the police revolver, though, to shoot their family dogs quite a bit. That happened a lot. Bad dogs didn't last very long.
Yeah, didn't last long. But no, he used
bad
to come home and,
to the
dogs. And, you know, he'd go to these training seminars and learn new tactics with his baton, and then he would come home and, hey, let me show you what I learned, and then he'd take this away. And we got a lesson on never grab a baton. So, yeah, we had some fun. You know, it was all in good fun. I mean, you know.
That's where I learned about the term wood shampoo. It was one of his dad's terms. Had to give that guy
a little bit different tactics.
Give that guy a wood shampoo. Yeah, that's probably not happening much anymore.
That was during the time when they were teaching him never hit a guy with an overhand blow with a nightstick. Always kind of go in low off camera. So, I mean, there's little things that they learn and put you in.
Did you ever hear the term five from the sky? that was the overhead.
Five from the sky. That's never good. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
But anyway, meanwhile,
we digress.
But we digress. But you know what? Honestly, this is I just really thought it was important with all this stuff that's been happening lately to talk about it, because in some cases the police are wrong. I mean, they're not perfect either.
That's why we have investigations. So when there's a significant use of force incident, I can't speak for all agencies, of course, but at least in our agency, or if there's an officer-involved shooting, discharge of a weapon, there's a multi-jurisdictional investigation, and that investigation is conducted by another agency, generally Reading Police Department, with the assistance of the Sheriff's Office, District Attorney, Anderson Police Department, California Highway Patrol, and they...
So you guys don't investigate yourselves, which
correct.
Totally stands to reason.
We technically, by law, you could do that, but most agencies have some type of a multi-jurisdictional protocol, or in some cases, they have, like, the District Attorney's Office, investigators come in and help them. But the large agencies... like Los Angeles or any other large agency, they have their own officer-involved shooting teams.
Oh, really?
So they do investigate their own, but they can get other assistance. And then those cases are reviewed by the district attorney's office to see if they were lawfully using the force. And then internally to see if the use of force was within the protocol, policy, and procedure.
Now, does our district attorney have their own investigators?
Yes.
Outside of the sheriff's department and
They have law enforcement. They are peace officers, just like any other peace officer in the state, but their title is a DA investigator.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it came up in the chat room that, you know, people said, well, sometimes, you know, law enforcement, you know, bottom line is that law enforcement's doing the wrong thing. But the time to disagree with that is not when you're in the situation. You know, the cop says put your hands up and you don't feel like you should have to put your hands up. That's not really the time to...
That's exactly right.
To figure that out, who should have put your hands up.
Follow the orders, and then if you're getting... A person is getting arrested, hash it out in court. If they are following some orders and they're being detained for some reason and then they're released afterwards with no charges going forward and they don't think that that was treated right, they can file a complaint with the officer's supervisor, and then here in California, we have to take that complaint by law and then investigate those complaints.
Yeah, I just don't know when it ever became a good idea to duke it out at the time.
Yeah, and of course,
it just seems like that's happening more and more and more, and I just don't get it.
You get into resisting the arrest of an executive officer, that's a whole other charge, and then generally some type of assault on a peace officer charges. Or worse, that's not good.
Or you do something stupid, like you reach for something and then you wind up
getting hurt. You could get hurt with an impact weapon, a taser, or a firearm. Boils down to obey the law. Follow the instructions of a law enforcement.
At the time, you have to comply. And I would wager to say that 99% of this stuff would never happen if they complied at the time of the arrest or
There's also some other people are trying to make this a racial issue. Well, more Caucasian individual white people are shot by law enforcement than there are black people,
and
they
can, really?
Yes, you can recover that. You can do some searches, and because that's all recovered in statistical data by the Department of Justice and the FBI.
I didn't know that.
Well, how come? I was just going to ask something stupid. Sorry. I was going to say, why don't we ever hear that? Never mind.
It doesn't make good news, and they try and sensationalize that or stretch the facts.
Well, that brings up another point. With the media, I think a lot of times we see the media reporting on situations without all the facts and really spinning it in one direction. And it irritates me to death when they pretty much try the case before they even have the facts.
Well, usually
there's a lot of power there.
When it's a very chaotic incident and maybe it's still developing, they'll start reporting whether or not they have the facts, and they'll find some expert witness, which is usually a retired law enforcement officer, sometimes an FBI agent, and they're making speculations as to what is going on. And then if you're coming in mid-report, you don't know if that's speculation or if that's what's going on there.
Well,
that's how that things get misconstrued.
Yeah, and they get an expert on there and then ask them, you know, how do you feel about this? That has no bearing on
that person wasn't there.
Exactly.
The person didn't have firsthand knowledge. And that's usually in law enforcement, too, for dealing with the media. We try and get something out and talk to them and start answering their questions if it can be done, because we know if we don't, they will go out and try and find some information or start speculating and potentially make it up. And I mean that kindly, but they're going to start speculating and trying to report on it. If they got to get a story, because it's a very competitive market.
We listened yesterday for probably 10 or 15 minutes to the thing about Dallas, and this guy had to just stall for time.
Oh, and it was getting ridiculous.
He was actually using words that weren't real. You know what I mean? Without the actual scripting and the telepromptering, yeah, it wasn't going well.
And so they'll go out and try and find witnesses. Hey, what did you hear? What did you see? And that person may have not seen anything but heard something, and that, again, they start building into that. Or As in the case with Ferguson, there are just some people that were on television that were talking to the media that were just flat out lying about the incident.
Sure. Yeah, because, well, if you tell the story enough times, it'll become true.
That's what I think some people believe.
Yeah. When we come back, I want to talk about the difference between, like, sheriff's department and police department, and that kind of goes to, you know, the urban and rural setting of policing and what goes on in those and,
oh, and
you
also
know,
too,
response.
The level of training.
No, that's all we're going to talk about. We're not talking about your thing.
Oh, we're not. Okay.
You just got shut out.
Okay, totally messing with you. I just couldn't resist.
I'm going to go get coffee.
Yeah.
Okay, you can have the next guy.
Cream or sugar.
I always like the look on your face with
what?
That.
We know who's in charge here, Bill.
Yeah, he's blocking the fan and I'm dying over here.
Bob, mic one. Shut that down. Mic one.
You're listening to We the People. Join us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
You know, on the TV and the radio. She was young, her heart was pure, but every night it's bright she got. She said sugar sweet, she got me rapping to the beat, then I knew that she was hot. She was singing, don't turn around.
Point made.
Yeah. Excuse me, officer, is that a gun in your pocket?
Yeah, really. Point it at my face. I think I'll run away. Brilliant. So tell us, Tom. Okay, so you guys basically all get the same training, whether you're a city police officer.
Yeah, if you're with maybe medium size or larger, you might get more training. But there is a minimal amount of training that, for in California, all law enforcement officers have to have, and then also a minimum amount of ongoing training that we have to take every 2 years.
Because, like, okay, the Highway Patrol has their own academy and all that stuff.
They do, but they also have to meet our California State Commission on Peace Officers Standards and Training. We just call that POST for short.
Oh, right. Okay.
So they still have to meet the POST requirements for law enforcement training. And then they have their own training as far as vehicle operations, paramedic and EMT training for medical care for people.
That's true, because they do a lot of different
accident
stuff.
Investigation, because that's their primary function is accident collision investigation. And then driving, they have a much more higher level of competency for driving than does the California Commission on Post, who has some other requirements.
So the highway patrolman who zoomed up on me and tried to rear-end me and then tried to pass me on the right in the shoulder, he probably didn't do well on that.
Well, I was wondering if you'd talk to a counselor about that, because that's something that you tend not to be able to let go of. So
I can't. I'm still mad about it.
But they do receive a higher level of training in regards to driving and pursuit operations.
Sure, they would.
Than most law enforcement.
So if you decide that you want to be in law enforcement, do you have to pick what you're going to be before you, like, could... Do you go to an academy, and then do you decide if you're a sheriff or a city police? Could you?
Depends. I started out, and when I applied, I went to an academy. I put myself through an academy. I wasn't sponsored, is what we call it here. And so, when I got out of the academy, I was picked up by the Shasta County Sheriff's Office and worked in the jail. 2 weeks after I started here, Bakersfield Police Department called me and wanted to know if I wanted to come to work in Bakersfield. And I said, thanks, but no thanks. And been here my entire career and moved up through the organization. Was later elected sheriff in 2006. And so I'm going on my 38th year of law enforcement and my 10th year of sheriff for Shasta County.
Yeah, and most agencies have their requirements, which mm-hmm. start with like post training,
right,
and then go from there. Just depending on what you want.
You could be
to
sponsored
do.
By an agency, like for a police agency. We've had others get hired on here, then they lateral over to a police agency, a city police, and we've lost a few officers to Reading PD and some other agencies. I think we lost one to California Highway Patrol as well.
Hmm.
So
when you get down to dealing with, the deadly force and all that, who does that more? The guys out, like your guys? Is there any sort of rhyme or reason to it? Because the guys in the city, they're going to have backup. Your guys are usually going to be far away. They're going to have different
for
tactics.
For us, for the people that are from out of town or out of state, because I know you have other listeners, Shasta County is located in far northern California. I call it the real Northern California.
Yeah, the actual.
We're about 2 hours north of Sacramento. Our county is about 3,850 square miles with a population of about 177,000. Our seat is the city of Reading, which is a little over 60 square miles, I think, and about 90,000 population. So the population base, of course, is in the city of Reading in a more concentrated area. And so you're going to have usually more incidents occurring and more calls for service since that's a population base. But your officers are there also, and there's usually a will field somewhere between 3 and 5 officers on a patrol shift, but they're pretty spread out, and it's not uncommon for backup to be anywhere from 0 to 30 minutes away, maybe longer depending mm-hmm. on where you are in the county.
Right.
So what do you do different? I mean, how your guys would need different training for that.
Not necessarily training, but it comes with experience and knowledge on how to handle that. So when I was out on patrol, you usually had to learn a little bit on reading people, asking, getting an idea if you needed backup, or listening to the call, and then you were always started towards in the direction where the officer was until they gave a signal that they were okay and didn't need anybody else. But then again, it's usually when you're in a fight or something's happening, 3 minutes can be a lifetime. So I got into the canine work because I wanted to have a canine partner with me, and that was essentially a way to having a backup officer, four-legged.
Is that a canine dog?
Canine dog.
Because I heard that on the news.
That's what they were saying on the news yesterday. They're going to send in the canine dog like there were other canine options.
That was interesting.
Sorry, I forgot about that.
Yeah, the canine dog.
I've never seen any canine cats.
So. I said the canine dog.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, good thinking.
So I got into canine work, and having my partner was a furry four-legged friend there. And at least if there was a scuffle, an assault, he would come to my aid for officer protection.
And I always thought a canine would just be a perfect partner for so many different reasons.
They have
to go into a dark building or
they have
chase
a
somebody.
Keen sense of smell and hearing when it comes to searching for suspects or for drugs.
Mm-hmm. They're allowed to bite. You're not.
They do bite. I can bite as well. If you're in a fight, you're in a fight. But the only way that a dog has to contact the person we can go hands-on. They don't have hands. And so that's the way they contact a suspect is with their mouth, and they bite.
And people sometimes respect a dog more than they do the person.
There'd be suspects that want to fight several of us. But you mention a dog, and the fight's over. They do not want to get bitten by a dog.
Mm-mm.
And so I went into canine work and loved it. Mm-hmm. And
my dad had experience with canines, and that's exactly what he said too. Is you can just tell somebody you're going to send a dog in, and they're on the ground. They do not want to get bit. And you know, it is painful, but I guess they just don't equate how much pain an officer can put you in versus a dog. A dog is instant. That's
dog's not
exactly
going
right.
to have compassion for
well,
you.
No,
let
and
up
that's how they're going to hold
make
you.
A mistake.
You can run. The dogs run at somewhere between 15 to 18 miles an hour. At least my dog did. And you have to be a pretty fast.
They're going to catch you.
Yeah.
They're
going to catch you unless you happen to be like, go behind a door and close the door behind him.
Yeah, and then you're not going to, you know, jump in a bush and hide. You're not going to, you know.
Because the dogs will jump right into the bush.
Exactly.
So, like, when
but
you get
when in, you're out in the field, if you're by yourself on a traffic stop or way out somewhere, Usually you have to be a bit more thinking on your feet and keeping your distance and stalling for time until your backup gets there. Or if you don't have that option, you got to go hands-on and you got to use force. And so what sometimes people see in the media, there might be 15 seconds, maybe 30 seconds of some video, but they show it on the news,
five seconds.
Well, it looks really bad. And when we use force, it can look bad. It's sometimes a violent confrontation if you're having...
Like they throw them on the ground, you know, and handcuff them, but they didn't play the part where they asked the guy a million times to...
Or there was already the struggle before they had to get thrown to the ground.
Yeah.
Or before they pulled out their impact weapon, their baton, and had to strike them. That looks awful when you're striking someone, but that's a reasonable use of force when applied properly.
Mm-hmm. So if you have somebody in your... you know, in your department who, I mean, let's face it, we all know people who are aggressive. I don't care if they sell cars for a living. We all know people who are more aggressive than other people. So if you have somebody who is just kind of a hair trigger that way, do they get weeded out pretty fast?
I won't say weeded out, but usually they'll have some other issues going on for use of force. They'll be looking at it. They'll have a, and some departments track for use of force and citizens' complaints of their officers. I know that L.A. City, LAPD, and L.A. County has a tracking mechanism in their software for the types of force that is used, whether it be impact weapons and hands-on taser, all the way up to lethal force, and then the types of arrests that they're making, too. So maybe another officer has a lot of resisting arrest. We call them 148 because that's a penal code section for them. But they have a lot of 148 arrests where people are just non-compliant with them. So that's it can be an indicator. So you might have a...
That they're getting into things with people more than maybe they need to?
It could be completely legitimate.
Right.
Or there could be some issues there of maybe the officer could have some issues going on.
But that all gets looked at. I guess that's my point is that people don't, you know, once you get hired, whether you're working for the sheriff's office or a city PD, you don't get to just put on your badge and run around and do whatever you want.
You have to write reports. You have supervision. There's citizens that call and complain on you. We have to investigate those complaints. There's witnesses to those complaints. Some witnesses are officers. Some witnesses are officers from another agency. Some witnesses are witnesses, John Q. Citizen out there.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a little more difficult when it's just an officer and a suspect, and the suspect is filing a complaint, because then it's usually one word against another.
Well, and especially if they turn out to be a criminal.
Correct.
Then it looks like the complaint, obviously.
But then again, in today's world, there's usually some type, unless you're out in the rural areas, of course, there's usually some type of surveillance going on. Again, that cell phone footage. Maybe many, many people have their own closed-circuit TV monitoring systems at their homes and out in front of their streets.
More and more, you're seeing dash cams, you're seeing
and so there's a lot
everywhere of
cameras out there everywhere. And so then if we're looking for something, or someone might come up and say, hey, this is what I captured on my dash cam or out.
Sure.
Then that can be good. If the officer is dishonest, lies during an investigation, and there's a term that has gone around in our profession for a long time, if you lie, you die. That means if you lie as an officer and you're caught lying, you're fired. Because your truth, your integrity, and your honesty is everything.
Plus, if you got caught once, how many times did you do it and you didn't get caught?
Exactly. And then you go to court, you get disciplined. Say if you got disciplined for it and not fired, then they usually file motions to get into your personnel record. And then they said, well, if you lied to your own office during an investigation, how do we know you're not lying to this
department's
person?
Doomed.
So an officer's entire credibility is tarnished when that happens. And, of course, when bad incidents happen either on our own agency, local other agencies, or nationwide, our badge gets tarnished from others' actions as well.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's the bad part. All right, when we come back, we need to talk about what do you do after stuff like this, and how pervasive is it? You know, if they're picking guys off someplace, I mean,
we received some notices on that as well. But we'll come back after the break.
Lovely. And you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
So we were just talking at the break, and again, many of these incidents could be avoided.
Oh my gosh, almost
obey
all of
the law,
them.
Follow the orders. Don't run. Don't flee, because usually the pursuits you see get happening, and then
don't reach for things.
Don't reach for things, especially unless you're told to. But all of our officers, we sent out a notice this last week, basically to remain vigilant. Especially sometimes maybe even hyper-vigilant of some things going on.
And that creates mistakes. I mean, it can.
It could from that. But we see people sometimes, oh, I'll stop and see what this officer is doing, where you stop behind an officer. Well, that becomes very distracting for an officer. Maybe they want to videoing it or something. I've seen that happen. What do you mean?
Stop behind them while they have someone else stopped?
Yes. And then
what?
Somebody. Yeah, I've seen that happen where people want to video that. Or maybe, oh, that's my friend, and I'll stop. Well, now that becomes a distraction if they don't recognize a person and stuff. So that can very much be a problem. But we received a notice from another agency, national agency, that there could be individuals that want to just take out law enforcement as a whole. And so it could be no rhyme or reason. It could be in any city or county across the nation, and you never know when that is. And so that's why sometimes they say, well, sometimes officers are somewhat emotionless. We have a very stern look on our face most of the time, and we're at a distance of 3 to 5 feet away from people, and we have a bladed body position, and they're saying, what, are you scared? No, that's officer safety, officer survival techniques on the way we're supposed to stand and have a space cushion or a distance between somebody. But some people take an offense off us because it's not your warm and friendly Andy of Mayberry.
Yeah. Well, it's getting harder to be Andy of Mayberry because that's not really working out so well for the most part.
And bottom line is, I mean, if you're an officer and you're out there doing your thing, if people want to get to you, they're going to get to you.
Absolutely.
You cannot protect yourself just like you can't protect your property or anything else.
Suspects often have the element of surprise.
Sure.
So you're stopping a vehicle for that taillight out or expired registration or speed going down the road. Generally, you never know who you're stopping.
No, you don't.
It could be an unreported stolen vehicle. That person could have just killed his wife and is fleeing it. They see the red lights. They don't think that they're speeding. They think that they're getting stopped by the officer and then could take some type of force against them.
Sure. Well, we haven't even talked about all the people that are on drugs. I mean, so that's a whole
we see that,
that's a whole different category.
Or people with mental health issues as
well.
Oh,
yeah, there's that.
And so you add drugs and mental health, so that's a bad recipe going in there as well.
Well, and all you have to do is watch one episode of Cops, and you realize that, I mean, you see something totally innocuous. You know, we're going to pull this car over, right? He's got a broken taillight. And then all of a sudden, it turns into this whole big thing because it turns out that guy's riding with another guy who's got, you know, a ton of crack under the front seat.
I think the majority.
It's crazy.
Yeah, the majority of people don't come in contact with that part of our society and police.
But you guys get to meet them all.
Law enforcement comes in contact with that every day. That's who they deal with. Yeah. Are the people that are out there breaking laws.
Go someplace. My wife, if we're, you know, going somewhere, I'm completely off duty, she'll pick up something saying, "What are you staring at?" "Well, I'm staring at that person over there." "What are they doing? It doesn't look like they're doing nothing." "No, that person is being suspicious. Something's going on here." And it's just that we develop that sometimes sixth sense or knowing what suspicious activity is, and it's usually a clue if you have some tattoos from about your forehead down to your wrist going on.
Are neck tattoos a clue?
Sometimes. Granted, some can be artwork, but some of the tattoos we see are indicative of gangs and prison and stuff, and that's generally a clue.
Which seems kind of stupid that you would advertise that, but I guess if you're in a gang, I guess it's about the advertising.
Right.
So what about the public? There's some notes going on in the chat room here about, you know, volunteers and different things. That's becoming less likely in the police department from a safety standpoint. And
For our sheriff's office, and I know some of the Northern California sheriff's office as well, we have a great volunteer contingent of people. Shasta County Sheriff's Office, we have about 400 people that are volunteers.
Really?
Those are mainly search and rescue volunteers. And these are people who can become experts in man tracking, ground search teams, evidence searching. They have their four-wheel drive, so they can help us get into remote areas. We have four-wheel drive vehicles as well, but this is another contingency for search and rescue. Snowmobile team, mountain bike team, scuba diving, a whole bunch of stuff. We also have Citizens Volunteer Patrol, and wow, it is coming up at the end of the hour.
We're
getting the bump, bumped out of here. I want to thank you for having me on once again. And
thanks a lot.
Back.
We just thought we should talk about this side of it. We've talked about gun laws and all that, but this is important.
But if you're interested in volunteering for the sheriff's office, give us a call, 245-6167, and we can hook you up with what you may be interested in.
Nice.
And Tom, thank you for what you do, and thanks for coming on and kind of straightening out the record for everybody.
And next hour, we have Sheriff John Lopey from Siskiyou County. We're going to hear his perspective on this. Different angle of law enforcement. We'll be right back. WeThePeopleRadio.us.